Some of my touchdowns were premeditated. They were planned, mm-hmm. and some were just, you know, just, they were spontaneous. Other than that, like I said, I wouldn't say that I'm a godfather.
All sexually orientated.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm a...
Do you think it have something to do with your blackness and your gyration of your pelvis?
I guarantee you, I'm sure it did.
What's up, everybody? This is Sebastian Joseph Day.
And this is Mike Tyson, and we're on Hot Boxing, and we have a very, very interesting guest today, the great Terrell Owens. Hey, brother, how you doing?
That's what's up. I like that. You said my name right.
And nigga, you know I can't say nobody's name right. God damn. I'm a lispinesium. You know, a lispinesium? Somebody's born speaking with a lisp. Mm. Yes, I'm lispinese. So what's up, man? How you doing, bro?
Hey, what's up?
I'm good, man. I'm just chilling. I'm glad to be here. Number one, thanks for having me on the show.
Tell me, what are you doing, brother?
Just trying to stay busy, man. Just, you know, trying to, you know, be a father.
That's a journey. You know what I mean? Isn't that something? That's a test.
You know, just post-football, just trying to, you know, keep life going.
I hear you, but what do you do? What are you planning? What do you want to do? Like me, I sell weed. I do this stuff now after fighting and stuff.
Well, I have a few irons in the fire. You know what I mean, obviously, a lot of people have come to me trying to get in the health and wellness space. Obviously, I've kept myself in great shape.
No doubt. That's why we have Legends Only League, and you might be want to be a part
I've heard
of this,
it. Yeah, absolutely. My newest and probably most passionate venture now is I've gotten into the wine space. I'm very fortunate by Mr. Tommy Lasorda, rest in peace, to collaborate, partnership with his wine.
And what is the name of your product? I see you have it right here.
We created my own. It's called 81. So it's made of, it's a cab blend. So some of the characteristics of a cab, Cabernet is big, bold, and dry. Don't consider the dry part as it relates to me.
Does it boom, gives you the quick buzz?
It's 14.5% alcohol. Yeah. So it's really nice. It's smooth. Mm. Obviously, with the process, I mean, over the last two or three years, I've tried to develop a palate for it. My wine gave them great feedback as far as what I liked and disliked about it. A lot of the dry wines are more dry, which is a tannin. I wanted to stay away from that. Me being, you know, we talked about it earlier, being in the black community, you know, we didn't grow up drinking wine. You know,
hardcore
was hardcore liquor. And so,
gin, wine, exactly. Hardcore poor stuff.
Right. So
99 cents.
Right. So I want to be a part of really trying to educate the black community about wine. So this is, relatively speaking, it's on the sweeter side of Cabernet. So it's not, if I say sweet, don't think you're going to drink it and it's going to taste like grape juice. It's not. But based on the contents, based on the ingredients, this right here is made with ripe black cherry, plum preserves, cinnamon stick aromas, dark chocolate.
You're so advanced in the knowledge of this.
Yeah, and a spicy toasted oak. And I know for a lot of people that are listening, if you have some women, the women audience out there with those characteristics that I just described, I was describing the wine. I wasn't talking about myself when you talk about dark chocolate, spicy toasted oak. All that good stuff.
Continue, man.
Yeah.
Continue.
I'm very grateful. Like I said, this opportunity came about through my marketing management. Through a mutual friend of the Lasorda family. Mm-hmm. And like I said, God rest his soul, I wasn't able to meet Mr. Tom Lasorda. He passed right the week before I was supposed to come out to L.A. to meet him. And so this is obviously...
When's your birthday, man?
December 7th.
God damn, what, he's Sagittarius?
Yep, I am.
God damn.
So being here in Los Angeles, you think about... Just think about some of the legends here in Los Angeles. So obviously this was a great collaboration partnership. And I agree to it because he's a Hall of Famer.
I love his promotion skills, too.
Yeah. Hey, he's a Hall of Famer. Like, he's one of the Los Angeles legends here. You think about Magic Johnson. You think about Kobe. Some of the greats that have obviously graced. I mean, Magic Johnson, James Worthy. There's so many greats here. And so, obviously, two-time World Series champion, manager, and Tom Lasorda. So I thought it was a no-brainer, obviously, to partner. He was already a Hall of Famer. I became a Hall of Famer in 2018. Mm-hmm. So the wine has been going well. We're already slated to do this is a 2017 Cabernet, so we're slated to do a 2018 and possibly a white wine, or maybe a rosé. for the summer.
Okay.
So,
okay.
So stay tuned.
Summer vibes. Cool.
So stay tuned.
Tell me about you. I'm interested in you. Where you from?
I'm from Alexander City, Alabama. A lot of people didn't really know much about me coming out of a small school. Our high school was a big school. It was 6A. But when you think about some of the great athletes that came out of my high school, I guarantee you, none of them would have thought that I would have made it, you know, to the NFL, let alone being in the Hall of Fame. I have two sisters, one brother in my immediate family.
Yeah.
On my dad's side, I have five stepsisters. I didn't know who my dad was until I was about preteen, probably like around 11 or 12. The interesting thing about my dad is I found out that he lived right across the street from me, and I didn't know who he was.
And your mother never explain that?
No, not until it was some years later. I just did the show probably like about 6 years ago. I did Iyanla VanZant on OWN Network, yeah, where we kind of, you know, brought my
mom. Oh, she's from Brownsville too.
See, there you go. You know, so yes,
she just found out she's from Brownsville too.
Yeah, so
100%.
Yeah, so I went on her show. You know, obviously there was a lot of, you know, emotional, hard questions that needed to be asked and answered.
Yeah, you gotta confront yourself.
And
nobody on the planet wants to do that. No,
right. So, I mean, it was a good experience. I wouldn't say that it brought my relationship any closer or made it even worse with my dad. I still, when I go in town, I'll stop by, holler at him. I'm a grown man now. I think I was 39 Absolutely. When I did the show. So at the end of the day, I feel like, you know, what I'm trying to do as a father, the things that I lacked and didn't experience with my father, I try to experience and do with my kids.
Awesome.
Given the opportunity.
You know, I got acquainted with my father when I was 24, and I didn't know I really loved him. He was awesome.
All right. So other than that, man, like I said, I wouldn't say I'm a success story, but I think I am.
Why wouldn't you say it's a success story?
I mean, like I said, I mean, there's a number of greats out there that obviously there's different paths to everybody's success and journey.
What do you consider success?
For me, I think, you know, NFL afforded me the opportunity to provide for my family things that we weren't able to experience. Not only just from a financial standpoint, but that's a big part of it, coming out of a, you know, low income family. Black community, just, you know, being able to do for my family. There were some pitfalls that came along the way, obviously, throughout that process. Me coming out of UT Chattanooga, which is a small Division I AA school, being drafted to the Niners. Once I had and I felt the opportunity and granted the opportunity to be able to not only provide for myself, but play with some of the greatest athletes in the world. So when I went there in 96, I had no idea that I was going to end up, you know, some years later in the Hall of Fame. I played with the great Jerry Rice.
Yeah.
My quarterback, you know, starting out was Steve Young. I played with Merton Hanks, Lee Woodall, I mean, Harris Barton, and a lot of greats throughout that organization. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for me, I talk about, you know, when I talk to kids or anybody ask me about my path and my journey to be who I am today, I talk about 3 D's. That's desire, dedication, and discipline. Everybody has a desire to be or do something in life, but you have to dedicate yourself, and there's a level of discipline, obviously, to reach that level of success.
Really? You don't believe that everybody's ordained to do what they're doing? It's not because he's more disciplined than someone else? I'm sure you met people more athletic, more disciplined than you, and they didn't make it.
Yeah,
that's
for sure.
The whole story.
I mean, I know. Yeah, from the South. Yeah,
that's
I definitely know
that's
that.
How we stay in check because the guy's better than us, and we know it. The other guys don't know, but deep in our heart, we know it.
Nice. Right. Yeah. I mean, I definitely, like I said, growing up in the South, went to church every Sunday throughout the course of the week. There was always something my grandmother had us in church for. So I definitely know that I'm definitely blessed. But I had to make the most of the skill set that I had. And so I developed a passion to play football. I always wanted to play basketball. Even when I went to UT Chattanooga on a scholarship, I ended up walking on the basketball team and played 3 years of basketball.
Wow.
I never thought I was going to play beyond the collegiate level. That's
but
how.
After that illustrious career, what do you think about doing now? How old are you at this moment?
I'm 47.
Still a young kid.
47. Just trying to maximize and like I said, you know, the opportunities in which the NFL has afforded me to. Blaze is just trying to make the most of opportunity.
I can see you, you know, when you're talking, you have a great diction. You never thought about going into business in the enterprise?
Perhaps. I mean, like I said, I do a lot of speaking engagements. And before, obviously, pre-pandemic, obviously, speaking engagements where I've talked to, you know, trading stock companies, different companies that have hired me to come in and speak on how an athlete's mindset is applicable really kind of to what they're doing whatever job, occupation, or company that I'm speaking with. So I just try to just utilize the resources that I have, obviously, to better myself post-football.
Who needs a change of scenery right now? Anyone in the world. So it's good that Apartments.com has the most listings anywhere. We're not just talking apartments, but houses, townhouses, condos, and all matters of decimal from the oh so cozy to did you just hear an echo in here? And with 3D virtual tour, you can reach for your special somewhere from anywhere to stretch these fingers across the keyboard and change your scenery on Apartments.com. The most popular place to find a place.
Weren't you on Blackish? I saw that. You were acting a little
bit. Yeah. I've done a little acting.
You're an awesome looking guy and stuff. I want
you. Well, thank you, Mike. Thank you. That's
listen,
that's
you get a lot of pussy, don't you? Now, criminal, huh? Listen, man, listen. This
I is, have five kids, so you would have to listen, think.
I saw this, this must have been like 6 years ago. I saw it was this white girl. What was her name? God, this is a monster. She was a monster. She was in love with you.
Who?
Oh, come on. I don't know her name. God.
What was she?
Is she an actress? Or
no, she was just one of these internet chicks that look like God Amazon, was showing off.
Amazon?
Yeah. Oh, no, God was showing off when they made her. So that was your girlfriend. She told me she had pictures with you. You know
who
the fuck I'm talking
no,
about.
No, no, no. I need evidence. I need evidence, Mike.
Oh, God. I wish
you can't just throw it out there. You can't just throw it. You can't just throw it out there. I need some hardcore facts.
I like this guy so much. He should have been a lawyer.
I need some hardcore facts.
Oh, what was this girl? Oh, forget it. God damn.
They must not have been too much.
It was really a lot. That was your girlfriend, man.
She was?
She got pictures hugging you and stuff.
Oh, that means you probably got a lot of chicks that were hugging you. That doesn't mean they're my girlfriend.
Nah, this is what I was jealous about.
I mean, I take a lot of pictures, and I'm sure you've met a lot of people.
I don't want to hear that.
You take a lot of pictures. No,
I
don't
take them looking like that.
Like what? I don't know. I don't know who.
Beautiful.
I don't know who you're. I don't know who you're referring to.
Mike wants to see the Carfax. Exactly. He wants to see the evidence.
Yeah, exactly. You can't just throw it out there. That could be anybody.
Exactly. Put on beautiful internet white. Beautiful
Amazon.
That
could be anybody.
Tyrell Owens.
Man, what?
Listen, man. I forgot. Oh man. If it wasn't so long, I would remember her.
Okay.
Name.
Yeah.
Oh man.
But at the same time, like I said, man, I'm just just living life, man. Just trying to, you know, create some revenue streams for myself. Mm-hmm. Coming out with a clothing line here pretty soon. It's called Prototype 81. It's athleisure for men and women. And I'm going to have a small collection for kids called Prototype 81 Kids. So that'll be launching here pretty soon. So it'll consist of like hoodies, joggers, crop tops.
Why can't we have an organization where you could build an organization with guys that's still your age and still beautiful and can still do this stuff, and they can have Ray Lewis chase them?
Hey,
imagine that. Ray Lewis is faster now than he is when he was playing.
We were talking, but we didn't get to it. But I know for a fact that I could probably play. I should have played 4 or 5 more years before I didn't officially retire.
But if you could, you know, you pass these tests and you call Legends Only League, you're going to put your team together and you will be playing and the world will be watching.
Man, how long is that going to take? I'm 47. I ain't got 5 more years
It's going to take whenever you could establish your team. Yeah. How long is that going to take?
I don't know. It depends on the infrastructure of Legends Only.
Well, we can do anything.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm all about it now.
Oh, I like that. So you're on the list. That's okay.
I'm all about it.
It's going to be fire.
Because listen, Ray Lewis is riding bikes 200, 300 miles a day and stuff.
Yeah, I'm not really that. I can't.
We're not going to do that. We're keeping in shape to play football.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't like running. I like running when it's necessary. So if it's a sport that requires running, then that's what I like to do. But I'm not like one of those. I'm not going to go run a couple of miles.
See, that's
I'm not going to do that.
That's the Sagittarius in you because you're so beautiful. It's only particular things I'm going to do.
Hey,
that's just what
I got to do.
It's okay.
I'm grimy to an extent because, like I said, with my personality, my persona, everybody, when I play, people think, even now, they think I'm arrogant, they think I'm cocky, they think I'm brash. But that was. I needed that when I played, but off the field, I'm pretty chill, reserved, laid back.
That's our ego when we do it.
I think now over the years during the pandemic, because I've met pretty much with every agency here in Los Angeles, acting, different types of deals, modeling deals, anything, commercials, and I've never really gotten any feedback from a lot of these meetings. And I'm like, as you notice yourself, you observe, it's like, man, you're a handsome guy. I speak well. And I never really got any callbacks to like get any like major deals. So I'm like, why is that?
Yeah.
And so during the pandemic, I had a chance to just really just sit down and just assess like
yourself.
what has transpired over the last 4 or 5 years. Mm. And the fact that I told you like my persona, I didn't take that TO persona into the meetings. Mm-hmm. So when I came in, I'm like pretty chill, reserved. Like I wasn't playing a sport. Like I wasn't activated. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I didn't bring that passion into the meeting. So it was like, I guess they felt like they were getting a different person.
Mm.
Terrell came into the meeting. When I'm competing, you're going to get T.O. You get what I'm saying? So it's like Spider-Man or Superman. You got Clark Kent and you got Peter Parker.
Adjustable.
You got right, exactly. So, that. Again, that's what I realized.
Sometimes you got to be running with the ball when you're in that little room.
Trust me.
Running that ball, baby.
Trust me.
Directly speaking. How
exactly. So you just got, for me,
you know,
yeah.
But you got to be running that ball. The same energy is burning, right. Baby.
Yeah, but like I said, my boy Chad Ochocinco.
Oh.
Chad Johnson. He's on a 10 24-7. 24-7. Like me, I need to get to a 10. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I start out at like a 2, and then I work my way up
because
to a 10.
Because he wants it real bad. I see he wants the light.
That's just his personality. Great person. Mm-hmm. Great person. But that's his personality as well.
No, listen. You don't even know that you're a junkie. You don't know how addicted you are to that narcotic right there. See that? See that camera?
That's yeah.
That's a narcotic.
I turn on. When the cameras come on, like I know. Well, my coach told me this out of college. And he realized when I stepped on the field, and the lights came on.
Whole different person.
That's when I flourished. Yeah. That's when
I
blossomed.
You don't have that, you might as well get off the couch. That's what you need to succeed.
Yeah.
Self-belief.
Yeah.
The power of belief.
Oh, but that's, I mean, for what I did against some of the greatest in the game, especially, like I said, considering coming out of a small town in Alexander City, Alabama, going to UT Chattanooga, which is a small school.
Yeah.
People didn't think that I was going to be that guy.
Did you believe that? Did you believe that, though?
Oh, in myself, yeah. I mean, as a kid, even when I was in high school, I didn't even start.
What?
But I stood on the sideline, and I believed I could play or should have been playing. But as a coach, based on what they assessed and my skill set and my talent at that time, they didn't feel like I should be playing. So that was fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's the coach's job. But in my heart of hearts, I felt like I could have been or I should have been playing. But that didn't happen. So after like my sophomore year going into, obviously going from JV to the varsity.
Yeah, easy to get jealous of, though. It's so easy to be jealous of you.
Really?
Hell fucking yeah. You're beautiful and shit, talking shit all the time. Yeah, it's really easy to hate
you. But I did that because that was my confidence. Like that was sometimes that was a defense mechanism because when I was younger, I was skinny, scrawny. And when I came out of high school, I was probably like maybe 6'1", 6'2".
Okay.
Maybe 175, 80 pounds. So I was skinny, scrawny. My teeth was crooked.
Late bloomer?
Late bloomer.
Okay.
Girls didn't like me, no nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Got picked on. They call it picked on. I didn't know the term bully back in the day.
Yeah, like,
y'all, you getting picked on all the time, this and that. That motivated me. That drove me.
For sure.
So I knew, like I said, going into my senior year, and my junior and senior year, transitioning from JV to the varsity.
Yeah, man, how does it feel just to be in school? Because I ain't going to school. How does it feel? Motherfucker, the bell ring, then you change class.
If you just listen, I'm going to tell you.
Yeah, please,
I'm going to tell you. But no, it wasn't an easy transition. But I'm one of some of my coaches, they'll tell you I'm attentive. I'm very observant. And my coach, when I sat in the locker room after the season, we were actually in the weight room, and he was basically sending the seniors off, welcome the juniors to seniors, and that transition. He basically was saying to the younger guys for the future, the last, you know, the 2 years that you got left, he goes, yo, if you want to be like the seniors or if you want to be like, you know, some of these greats that have opportunities to go to college, he said, this is where it starts at. And we were sitting in that weight room. And that's what got me motivated because I was skinny, scrawny, and I used that weight room twofold, even when I went to college, because it not only helped me from a physical standpoint, it helped me from a mental standpoint, too, because it helped me.
Smoke don't bother you, does it, brother?
No, I'm good. I'm getting high right now. Just keep going. So, it helped me twofold. Like, it helped me from a mental standpoint.
You are getting high. You know what high means? Your highest thought of thinking.
Yeah. Mm. Well, the more we talk, I guess I'm going to reach that. I'm going to
reach that level.
Yeah. that was one of those things that I did was that I took to what the coaches told me. Yeah. So I knew that if I bettered myself, you know, in the weight room, like I said, I was getting picked on. Mm-hmm. So once I started lifting weights, I started getting bigger. Yeah. That gave me confidence.
Facts.
Not only just from just walking around the school halls and just, you know, outside, in, you know, in the streets, but it helped me from an athletic standpoint as well. So when I went to college, I did the same thing. My freshman year, I went home for the summer. They sent me home with the workout book. Not only did I do that, I even went to my high school while they were doing two-a-days. So I did their workout and my workout. So when
savage.
I
different.
Yeah. So different. But when I went back for my sophomore year, everybody noticed my body changed. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know it because I was just in it.
Mm-hmm.
I was exercising, I was running, like, to my school, it's probably like maybe a couple of miles. I ran to the school or I ran back from the school just for my conditioning. My sophomore year, everybody was like, man, what did you go home and do? Did you go home and do steroids? I didn't even know what steroids were. But I was just on that journey of just trying to get bigger, faster, and stronger. And I continued it throughout the course of my career. So when I got to be in the league, the defensive backs, I had, you know, stories they would tell me. They was like, when they saw me, they thought I played linebacker because that's how big I was. So I basically, like I said, I was sort of like that prototype, the prototypical type of receiver that you see today in the DK Metcalf, the Brandon Marshalls, the big.
Tell me your moment in football. What was your grandest moment in your mind?
The grandest moment?
Yeah, that you were so proud of.
Besides just making it into the league,
No, what move? Who you ran over? Who tripped over you?
Who you heard?
For a fan perspective, I think one of the biggest moments that I had was probably my third year in the league. Is obviously that was kind of like the stepping stone. It's kind of when I stepped out of the shadows of Jerry Rice and I started to make a name for myself. And this particular play, it honestly could have made or it could have broke me, but clearly it made me.
Which one? Told me to explain it.
We played the Green Bay Packers, NFC wild card game. I caught the game-winning catch for probably like about 8 seconds left on the game, in the game. The entire game had a couple, probably like 4 or 5 drops. I dropped a touchdown, a fumble, and it's typical. It's cliche. It's not how you start. It's how you finish.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kept at it. You know what I mean? I kept focused, and my teammates, they supported me, and I ended up making the biggest catch pretty much of my career at that time. And so that was kind of like a stepping stone for years to come. And so I really didn't think that I flourished as a receiver until I left San Francisco and I got with a quarterback that really kind of really complemented my skill set. I felt like from a coaching standpoint, I felt like I was held back due to the difference in caliber of quarterbacks that I played with. Steve Young played one way. Jeff Garcia played another way. No knock at Jeff, but he played a little bit more out of the pocket. He wasn't your prototypical stand-in-the-pocket passer type of guy. He's not going to throw a hose of ball 60, 70 yards down the field. Mm-hmm. So I had to adjust my game to his game.
Okay.
And so when I got to the Philadelphia Eagles and obviously played with Andy Reid, who's, you know, by far the best coach that I ever played with, he basically used me as a Christmas toy that you know what you're going to get. It has all the gadgets, bells and whistles. That's what he got in me, and he used me to the nth degree. Nobody really knew that I had the speed that I had until I got to Philly. They saw a little bit of what I could do, taking short passes, the long distance, intermediate passes, this and that and the other. But they never saw me bombs until I got to Philadelphia.
No one ever offered you a show like this.
I have my own podcast. Really? We're doing it. Yeah, we're right now in negotiations of different networks.
Pretty knowledgeable and exponent of football. You should have a show like that.
Appreciate it. Yeah, yeah.
From a knowledge perspective.
My podcast is called Get Your Popcorn Ready with T.O. and Hatch.
Ah, fire. I like that. I like that.
Hatch is a good friend of mine, played in the league a number of years. Again, very charismatic, knowledgeable guy. So we talk about a number of topics, not just heavy football, but, you know, we talk about trending topics. We bring on different guests
like
of all kinds.
What's the trending topic you would bring up?
Trending topics, I guess it would be anything social, like the social injustice, social inequality, things of that nature. I think like now, like we were talking about earlier, where football guys should leverage, you know, really the power that they have to get what they want. I know I referenced what the NBA is doing with guys like KD, LeBron, CP3, basically unifying and getting what they want, because they understand the power of really their blackness, their athleticism, and who they are and what they deserve. Just as me and Sebastian was talking about outside, I mean, football players, they have so much power that they realize that they don't have. And we were discussing that if they were, NFL is made of 70%+ black and brown players. Yeah. They don't have guaranteed contracts. They just added a 17th game to the season this year. That's only going to benefit the owners. And so once guys that are in position of power, guys like Sebastian here, these player reps, to understand the bigger picture, then it's always the question of the younger guys are not going to buy in. But that's this guy's job. There's guys like Drew Brees. He's not a black player, but he understands. Aaron Rodgers. Those guys understand. Everybody is not getting $100 million contracts. Mm-hmm. These younger guys, these first tier, first 2 or 3 year your guys, NFL makes more money than baseball and basketball combined. So they should have guaranteed contracts.
Why wouldn't everybody in the league put up a percentage and create a league of lawyers to prevent your guys from dealing with the problem? Because that's all you need, the league of lawyers that your guys can pretty much invent.
Well, they have the NFLPA, who's supposed to be, you know.
No. You have to get your all objective.
Be advocates for the players. But
these guys are with the owners. These guys are friendly with the owners. That's a contract of interest.
Sebastian. Listen. Y'all put me on the spot right now. Y'all making me sweat. No, but you're not lying. You were just saying that. Yeah, facts. T.O. was just saying that.
Listen, it's a conflict of interest. You know, you
can't. Did I not say that?
That's a law being broken as it is.
Right, but they have to.
That's why everybody. How many football players are there in the whole entire league?
Three. I don't know what the number is, but it's 70%+ black and brown.
Yeah, minority.
Period. So if you think that you put the owners in a bind, like I told you, get on the text message group text, man. Text the players that have leverage. Some of these star players, there's black star players on every team.
Yeah. Imagine a dream team of lawyers if all of y'all put a percentage of money in and you'll create your own office.
I'm telling you, it can
for
happen.
The embedment and for the protection of football players.
And that's the thing. Look at all the money that's being given out in baseball and basketball. Football players, they seeing this. Oh, my gosh. Man, they getting all this money. They can get the same type of money. They got the power to get.
In order to get money, you got to put up money. All you got to put your percentage, get your league of lawyers, get a dream team of lawyers, and go right at your football league.
That's nothing. But then at the same time, these younger guys have to be educated and knowledgeable about you're going to have to sacrifice. He's like, oh, well, these young guys are not going to do it because they're going to feel like they're going to be losing. Bro, to gain anything, you're going to have to sacrifice something.
Well, that's what you got to give up some money.
Regardless, like I said, it's going to be something. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to sacrifice
put your
something.
Money with your belief that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. Anybody gets bumped at gums.
Yeah.
And I feel doing bad, it. Bro, because like I said, it's just like the NFLP is that they're saying they're advocates, but as you said and as I've said, they just got to make it happen. Why do you think how many NBA cars union is so strong and the players are so strong?
How many cars you have? How many cars? Oh, no. Me, I only got one.
One car.
I'm from where I come from. My parents are Haitian, so they Haitian Americans. They taught me that, even though I got to the league, not to spend that money. So I'm very, I buy some
you
nice clothes.
Frugal,
I'm
cheap,
very frugal. Whatever you want to call it. I'm very frugal with it.
That's how I was. I wasn't cheap or anything. Yeah. I was just frugal.
Frugal. You have to be.
You like nice things. I bought nice things. Yeah. I wasn't like a designer type of guy, but
listen,
I like to dress nice.
If I saw a homeless person, I might give him $10,000.
I've done something similar.
Unadulterated pig with money.
You different, dog. You different. Hey,
I understand the gesture.
Yeah.
I understand the gesture.
It's all about the deed. That's all that matters.
It's all that matters. Yeah.
Giving back.
The white lions, the two white tigers you got, right?
I have four
of them.
You have
four? I have four white tigers.
What are the names?
And a lion.
So it's like me. I know there's a nice guy inside of you.
Everyone has a nice guy.
Yeah. Exactly.
Everyone does.
Me too.
So I'm actually curious now because I want to talk about this. So, in today's age of social media, all that joint, all that stuff, TikTok, all that dumb stuff, Twitter. If y'all are in y'all primes of football and boxing, I'm just curious to know, what would y'all brand look like, and do you think it'd be beneficial to you? Because I felt like you were absolutely. Yeah, you were so good with the media. Like,
bro, trust me, I wish we had the platforms then that we have now. Because, like I said, we're all human. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So we do get a little ticked off if somebody's saying some negative things about us, blah, 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 blah. We're human. But I would have been able to dispute or dispel some of the things that people were saying about me, mm-hmm. utilizing these platforms. Like I said, now I have my own podcast. So now I'm able to confront a guy mm-hmm. like a Sean Salisbury or a Skip Bayless or any of these, you know, former football players that are jumping on panels and then trying to discuss or critique, you know, commentate on who I am as a person based on hearsay or just conforming to just journalism.
The narrative
in itself. And so the narrative have been pushed out there to a degree that really people think that I'm like that even today. And then once they sit and talk to me 15, 20 minutes, or like I said, those meetings that I've gone into, they're like, dude, you're nothing like I thought you were. Because the media was so powerful then. Mm-hmm. It's powerful now.
Why would you care if anybody thought you were a certain way?
Like I said, we're human. At the end of the day, nobody wants to be talked down upon or thought of as being arrogant or cocky.
I really don't think most people care. I don't know most people in the world, but most people that I would know, fuck, people are going to think what they're going to think.
You know? Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, like I said, if I really allowed that to manifest, like I said, I heard it, but I didn't allow it to manifest because otherwise that would have affected my performance. Yeah. So I was raised by a strong black lady and my grandmother, Alice Black, and my mom, Marilyn Hurd. So they taught me to be strong. They taught me about what we've been going through within this last year, mm-hmm. about, you know, discrimination, mm-hmm. things of that nature, the racial divide. Mm-hmm. I already knew about that. I was raised by a grandmother that was raised in that segregation era.
So you think most people are unqualified or unknowledgeable about what's going on with the race issue?
Oh, absolutely.
Why? Explain that.
Because if they're not growing up or raised that in their environment, how else? And they're not trying to educate themselves.
I think every black person on this country has been raised in that environment.
Yeah, I'm talking about people not like white people.
Yeah.
Well, before we came to this country, white people were doing a good job in killing white people, too.
True. I don't know much about that. So, I mean, I can't say if it's true or not.
Oh,
but,
I can tell you it's true.
Colonization.
There were white people doing what slaves were doing before they went to Africa and encountered with slaves. Right. You know, this been happening as soon as God turned the light on slavery.
Yeah.
Or what it supposedly means.
Right, but I think if you look at what we're fighting for now is things that have been happening all along. You know, we're having to work extra hard.
But everything's happened before. There's nothing new under the sun. Everything's happened before. You know, this is a beautiful world. At its worst, during slavery, life is beautiful. So how could this really be bad? I understand we're fighting for love and for equality, but this is not the dire straits situation.
Right, but it's all about equality.
I extreme equality is in your heart. No one can tell you that they're better than you.
No, but if you're applying for a job and you have somebody hiring, then they can differentiate, you know, based on the hiring
process. Well, we were in that situation before and we made our own jobs.
Well, again, that's why you have, you know, the initiatives.
How can a man like you,
black businesses, and
how can a man like you not establish a job? You're over the hook, over the top in everything. People should be dying to give you a job.
Right, but those, like I said, you know, having the name, having the look that I have, becoming knowledgeable and having the right team of people, then yeah, you put yourself in a position to establish that.
Yeah, I think he's saying that in the black culture that a lot of times we're like five steps behind and we don't have that upper hand. We don't have that handout.
Right.
And we always having to go the extra mile, you know, go the extra mile. But I also understand what you're saying as well, Mike, about,
don't you think that fight is glorious?
Exactly. That, cause it's beautiful. It's like
don't you think
there's beauty in the struggle.
Exactly.
Yeah. I get what you're saying, trying to say as well, but T.O.'s also,
do you want anything easy? I don't want,
no, I don't, easy. I mean,
no, yeah. It's nothing. You don't want anything easy. But you want to be on an even playing field at the same time. Mm-hmm. If you're just as qualified or overqualified than somebody, then you feel like you deserve that. But then because of the color of your skin or just bias or prejudice, then you're not afforded that opportunity. And that's not equality.
Well, when people see me, I make sure they look and see a guy that's overqualified.
I mean, you can look overqualified all
no,
day.
No, no, no. I am overqualified. There's okay, nothing
you
that
can, well, whether you that, believe that or not.
No, it's a fact because it's look at my history.
Okay, but
it's a fact.
If you're not doing the hiring and you're not in control of that, being having all the confidence in the world that you're overqualified is not going to get you that job.
No, I don't believe that. I don't, you've been you're a college man, no?
Yeah, I went to college.
I probably went to the fifth grade. This is what a $300 million business. I don't know. How does that work? I don't know. You know, tell me, how does that work?
No, no,
I'm a
you
junkie.
Tell me.
No, I'm a junkie. You know, it's all about the desire to want to win.
I can learn from somebody like you.
To want to be up more than anybody wants you to be down.
Right, but if there are people that, like I said, in your situation are using you as an example or aspire to be
no doubt
where
I,
you
no
are.
No one's ever been as low as me.
So again, your hope. Your,
but no one's ever been as high as you either.
The fall is worth the climb. The fall is worth the fucking climb.
But again, you're a perfect example, you know, for anybody, you know, on that path to look up to.
Well, I don't know if I'm that person. No, I don't know if that person.
Right, but you're a walking blueprint. Like I said, if you've been at your lowest and you've been at your highest, then there are plenty of people that can learn from you.
No, because it's all by the grace of God. They can't
learn. That's first and foremost.
All by the grace of God.
That's first and foremost. That goes without saying. But that, like I said, a lot of people don't look at it that way. I do. Like I said, I wouldn't be able to do what I've been able to do if it wasn't for God. I truly believe that. Mm-hmm. He blessed me with a talent, and then I took advantage of the skill set and talent and the opportunity that he gave me. Otherwise, I would have just been average, just like when I was standing on that sideline, you know, from 88 to 92, mm-hmm. you know, in high school on those sidelines. I just would have stayed average. But I understood, you know, what was in front of me. There was opportunity that was given, and I took full advantage of them.
And so we all should. You know, sometimes I like to try to take advantage of things, but then there's always something in the fucking in the roadblock.
Oh, there's always going to be hiccups, there's going to be obstacles.
You know,
yeah. I mean, even with, like I said, you know, I've lost a lot of money. What I try to do now, like I said, people Google this, Google that. My experience and what I've gone through, I try to educate other people that are going to be in the same boat.
I respect that. You know, like people always say they robbed. I'm like, listen, people stole some money. I spent a lot of money.
Right.
I had some fun.
Yeah.
So I don't really say people took advantage of me. So
right, exactly.
I really had some fun and spent a lot of money.
Yeah, there's some accountability that has to that goes with it as well.
I don't even blame them no more since I came to the reality.
But that's why I'm curious. That's why I'm curious to know if Mike Tyson was in his prime, right?
Right.
And he had IG, Instagram,
dude, it would be
Twitter.
Stupid.
How would it be for you, Mike, if you had Insta? Like, think about it. Obviously, you have Instagram now, but you in your prime, champ of the world.
He'd probably be one of the top Instagrammers.
Yeah, you probably
with the most followers. A lot.
You wouldn't even need to get paid. I was gonna say
get
only
paid off
I was,
of social.
I was gonna
easy.
Say I was gonna say easy. Go on OnlyFans, but you're just giving it for free. You're just doing it for free. You're just doing it for free.
Hey, listen, God, listen. I was born for free. Two people were horny, and I'm born. Look what I got for nothing. You have to be born. All this good stuff. Life is a blessing. Even at its worst, it's a blessing.
Amen.
Absolutely, and that's what I'm trying to do now. Just like I said, take each day, each year, each month as it comes and take it as a blessing. I mean, we've all experienced a lot, you know, throughout this last year with the pandemic.
Yeah.
Then you add in the social injustice and inequality into the mix. Now we have right now.
Aren't you afraid for your kids and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, look at what's going on, the George Floyd.
And most of the kids, my kids, they white girls and stuff. So I'm saying, wow, imagine some psycho see that.
Yeah.
You know, I have a beautiful son, and he, you know, because they got the beautiful girlfriend. I said, wow, that's interesting. Imagine some psychos saw that.
especially like
to me, it's a beautiful picture. To them, at the end of their race.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me, especially when you, especially the demographic. I feel like, you know, out in Cali, like it's probably more acceptable. But like if you down south and you're doing that, like
that's
you know what I mean. Like it's different. Like,
it's not as acceptable.
Yeah,
And obviously California is one of those liberal.
It's just that some places you could do more than others states. About it.
Facts.
Yeah,
you know, it's just, I don't know. It's an interesting thing. I think we all, everybody on the planet, should just keep making love until we start looking like everybody. We look all the same, right?
But everybody don't see us the same. Yeah. That's the thing. They don't all see us. Yeah. On the surface, you may think that, but obviously, like I said, with this George Floyd,
this
George Floyd thing has basically brought a lot of racists to the forefront. Everything, the election, everything.
So what do you believe is going to happen to the young man that killed Mr. Floyd?
Oh, he's going to go down.
Do you really believe that?
I think I do. Mm-hmm. I think there's so much compelling evidence. And they're trying to distract by bringing in, obviously, the bystanders, everybody. They're trying to put them on trial.
A character.
Yes. Like, so, I mean, like, at the end of the day,
come on, man.
He's the one on trial. Like, he's going to go down for, he should anyway. He should. But anything can happen.
I don't know. I think if all the bugs in the planet died, I think the world would die. Right, I think if all the bees in the world die, I think, you know, the world will die. But I think if all the people die, the world will flourish. Because that's what we are. We're fucking fungus to the planet. Can you believe that?
If you think about it, though, like...
We're nothing but fungus. Intelligent
really
fungus.
Think about it, if you really think about it, though...
This like, is getting really deep.
No, this is getting deep. This is getting deep right now. But if you really think about it, like... You know, God put us on earth to, you know, recreate, you know, I'm religious, you know, follow the gospel and whatnot. And it's just so interesting to me because, like, bro, like, if you think about it, if you're into the earth and, like, you know, going green, all that stuff, mm-hmm. bro, like, we are legit destroying the earth.
Listen,
bro.
No, can I tell you something? Like, can you believe how small the crust is to a whole, like, a heated volcano underneath this planet? And it's so that the crust from us to that lava is just so thin, this world should blow up every day. Poof! But it doesn't.
It doesn't. We just stretching it, though. We pushing it, though. We every day we pushing it. Listen, we stepping on the gas.
We are. But our ego thinks we can't destroy this shit, man. Our ego, that's what the fact that we could think that we could destroy this place with this nuclear stuff. You can't destroy this. Maybe us.
Yeah, us for sure. So I'm kind of curious. I kind of want to go back.
Go really back.
Yeah, I want to go back to the whole Hall of Fame situation. So you were supposed to be in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
For some reason, they said character issues they didn't put you in. Right? 2 years.
Oh, really?
They held them out 2 years. Am I correct? 2 years they held you out?
Yep. But that's what I'm saying. That's what I was alluding to earlier is, again, the media, you know, basically pushed this narrative that I was a certain way. But again, like I said, there was nothing really I could do about that. Like I said, when I played with an aggression.
A guy like you would say something like, if I'm not in the Hall of Fame, there shouldn't be a Hall of Fame.
Well, I mean, I made my point. I made a stance without really just, I made my point without actually going there. I felt like they disrespected me. Mm-hmm. I felt like, based on my statistics in 2016 when I was first nominated, there's no doubt I should have been in. But according to the criteria, I checked all those boxes. But if you look at the makeup of the sports writers that nominate and induct the Hall of Famers, the players into the Hall of Fame, I think now as they have it, it's like about 48 of those writers. Maybe three or four of those are black people.
Oh, wow.
So it's like 90% white people and writers, and none of them even played sports. None of me played sports.
Isn't that crazy, though? Like, people that choose that stuff,
they don't care if they're black or white.
Right, but they hold your fate in their hands, at their pen, based on what they think about you, not adhering to the scope and the criteria of what it takes to get into the Hall of Fame. They basically just skirted right over that. and basically brought up character issues, things of that nature, off the field ish problems, which I had none. I had none. Never been arrested, none of that stuff. But that's what they used to prevent me getting in, not only the first year, but the second year.
Well,
the
in second Boston, year, there've been all types of people, murderers, rapists,
right? The second
sexes,
year,
absolutely, just murderers. Everything.
So they basically put my character in the same category as those guys and prevented me from getting in, instead of obviously, like I said, assessing me by my body of work.
That's because we're in such a, you know, I hate to say this because people get mad at me and they probably, we're living in such a, I hate even using this word, which is another word. We're living in such a fake society where people look in your eyes and they know they're lying and you know they're lying, but they still have to present themselves as liars.
Yeah, actors, they're all actors.
We're all actors, yeah. But just that some of them are toxic.
Yeah.
You know?
So that's essentially why you didn't go to the, when you did get inducted, that's why, why you did your thing at your college.
Absolutely. And again, I just felt like, again, knowing my path to get where I got, and like I said, not ever thinking that I would play beyond the collegiate level, and like I said, those three D's that I mentioned, mm-hmm. I had the desire, mm-hmm. I dedicated myself once I realized the skill set and talent that I had, and I used that discipline. You know, mm-hmm. discipline is that bridge between your goals and your success. And so obviously, to become successful at a sport that, honestly, like I said, I developed a passion for, and then, you know, have the opportunity to be honored at its highest, mm-hmm. and then I'm basically not being recognized fairly for that, then that's where I felt like it was unfair.
Yeah.
And so, again, we talked about the world isn't fair, but you know who you are. Just what you were telling yourself earlier. You know you're the best. Mm-hmm. I knew I was the best. In that class of people, I knew that I was the best. Yeah. I played with the best receiver of all time in Jerry Rice. He's considered the GOAT. You're considered the GOAT. I played, my statistics were set 2, 3, and 4 behind the greatest of all time. Mm-hmm. And I don't get in, not once, but twice. That's disrespectful. I got past the point of being, you know, I guess, the slap on the wrist the first year because they want to incorporate character issues in which there were none. Because there are plenty of Hall of Famers.
I think you're a sweet guy.
Well,
I think you're too clean. To
I wouldn't
back.
Say sweet. I wouldn't use the
you know
word
I mean?
Sweet.
I think you're too clean. You talk about you dirty characters and stuff. I don't know about that bad as white chick. That's all I know about you. The
right.
football.
But again,
that's again, all I know about this guy.
Right. But again, that just shows you, like I said, when it's not in your hands, what can you do?
Yeah.
Just like that word I was telling you. You can't do anything about it because they hold the power.
Yeah, they hold the power, but just talk to these people. That's power right there. See, that's that narcotics.
Oh, trust me. Oh.
You got to talk to these people right there. See those cameras?
Exactly. And that's why the platform that I use, that's why I did it at UT Chattanooga. Mm. That was a power move. I took the power into my own hands. For 15 years, they created a narrative that I was this person or that person. I had, and I used my leverage to do what I wanted to do, not what they said or basically adhere or anything that they had, whatever narrative they pushed for me or against me.
Yeah.
It didn't matter at that point because now I'm in control.
It's good. Being in control is tough, though. It's not easy being in control.
No, I did something that was different that hadn't been done in, 99 or 100 years.
We doubt ourselves a lot, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
a lot of doubt.
Nobody had, I mean, I had talked to Hall of Famers that basically were in the same position that I was in, knew that they should have been in the Hall of Fame. They were mad. They were angry. Mm-hmm. They said they weren't going to go to the Hall of Fame. As soon as they got that call, they succumbed to the call and they went anyway.
Yeah.
But anybody knows me, I'm a strong individual. I know my worth. I know what I did. I know what I'm valued at. And I didn't feel valued. I didn't feel respected based on the criteria. And like I said, I checked all those boxes to be a first ballot or, like I said, even to get in the second go around. So I took it upon myself, like I said, to do it at UT Chattanooga. They granted me the opportunity to do that. Like I said, I wasn't trying to show up the Hall of Fame, but I wanted to make my point that you can't keep continue to doing what you're doing based on the criteria for guys to get in. You should adhere to that. Don't, like I said, they always tried, they moved the goalpost for 2 years in order
to
get me in.
Who's your agent? Your agent's in here?
I don't have an agent.
No?
No, I don't have an agent.
oh, you should be doing fucking speeches, man. This shit sounds beautiful. You got to be talking some real shit. Oh, just be an actor or something, man.
I want to do more. I want to do more. Definitely, like I said.
Civil rights shit all the way. I see it.
Definitely want to do, like I said, you know, do some acting.
Yeah.
Like I said, do some stuff in the fitness and health and wellness space.
Yeah.
Like I said, just want to maximize, like I said, the time that I here that I have here on Earth. You know, just like this guy right here, he's in his fourth year in the league. So he got to maximize the time that he's going to be with the Rams. And if that's elsewhere, he got to maximize the time that he's able to run around.
Do you and him ever work out together?
Me and Tio, no.
Nah, he's on another level.
Listen, you see, he's a wide receiver. What honestly impressed me with Tio is that. What impressed me with Tio is that I'm a nose tackle. So I'm a defensive tackle.
Yeah.
And he's a wide receiver. He's as tall as me. So I'm like, oh, wow, I can't imagine. Yeah. And, you know, I grew up watching him play.
You should just give him a few feet and run, and you go right at his
So, I try to avoid those guys at all costs. If I'm running to this guy, I'm doing something wrong.
Yeah.
Or he's a hell of a
screen. Looks like a screen or something.
Right,
like
exactly.
Screen or something like
yeah,
that.
That's one thing that I kind of hate it sometimes, but that's just one time. Those some of those plays, you just got to, like, you just got to go with it. You know that you're going to get
bite
hit. You know you're going to be in chaos.
You know what I found out about football players? When I talk to Jerry Rice, every time I ever see him, I was like, the most humblest man in the world. I saw him on the screen. You know, I saw him on the stage with a bunch of other football players talking mad shit.
I mean, that's how it is. When football players get around football
Jerry,
players,
I said, this Jerry, yeah. Mr. Rice talking like this? He said, yeah, you see me on the field before, you just couldn't catch me.
That's the luxury
he's
that you have.
Talking to Lawrence Taylor.
Right. That's the luxury that you have when you're a Hall of Famer.
He is talking mad.
You're
shit.
You're in the class of some of the greatest that have ever played the game. Like, for me to say that, like I said, the game is, what, 100 years old now?
Yeah, it's old.
Dude, I never really watched football when I grew up. I watched basketball. I watched the NBA. So now to be in the Hall of Fame, to be my bus to be in Canton, and for people to have followed me, followed my career, know who I am. I'm one of the top, you know, three receivers that have ever played the game.
Oh, this is perfect. This is perfect transition to what I'm going to ask next.
So, again, but
it's perfect. It's perfect.
So they had the 100.
He very humbly talks shit. Go ahead, though. I love this right. stuff. I'm learning.
So, again, I got offended to a degree that they had the 100, the greatest 100 players to ever play the game. I'm second, 2, 3 receiver of all time, and I don't even make that list. I don't even make that list. How?
Yeah.
But like I said, you can have that attitude or that bravado or just that brashness all you want. Like, oh, yeah, I'm one of the best. But if they don't nominate you, if they don't say that you're one of the 100, then you're not. But in your mind, yeah, you can be that all you want to. So we all want to be recognized for what we do and what we've done. So at the end of the day, like I said, I know what I did and like what I was alluding to sit here now as a Hall of Fame, like I said, coming out of Alexander City, Alabama, I had no idea where I would have ended up.
I know
I didn't grow up as rough as an environment as you did.
I give advice. I used to say, hey man, I ain't saying none of this. I used to use it once or twice, and these white people ran with you. Talk to those white people. They said I'm the greatest. I don't know.
Right, exactly. So
you always said it. You always said it. I'm the greatest.
Like I said, I'm like I said, Jerry Rice is
kept writing it. They kept writing it. I was like, God damn, man.
So for me, so
it. Bad man, no, motherfucker, I was playing.
So at my position, Jerry Rice as a receiver, he's the greatest of all time. And so I went on Brandon Marshall's I Am Athlete podcast, and he's like, he asked me, said, do you think you're the GOAT? I said, yeah, I'm one of them. He said, there are no GOATs. I said, what you mean? I said, I feel like I've been put in that conversation as one of the greatest of all time. And if you don't think that I'm the greatest of all time, then look at me. I fit the description.
Ooh, talking shit.
I fit the description.
Talk that cash.
You know what I mean? So
that cash.
At the end of the day, like I said, for me to do and come from where I come from,
like
I said, I know what I deserve. I know who I am. I don't walk around cocky and arrogant. I know what that's like. There's a fine line between being cocky, arrogant, and being confident. When I was on that football field, maybe it rubbed off.
They're very close relatives.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. First cousin. Yeah, very close. I developed a passion for the game. I had to learn how to play the game. I had to learn how to play the position. And once I did that, I took it and I ran with it. You know, you talk about it. I mean, that's so cliche, but that's what I did. I realized that I was, like you said, when you talk about being ordained, I knew that God put me in this position for whatever reason. I just had to grasp it. I had to grab it. Because if not, if I didn't do it, if I didn't take advantage of it, I just would have been average. But I use some great examples while playing the game. Guys that had gone before me, you think about some of the great receivers that had played at that position. Mm-hmm. You look at basketball, you look at MJ, you look at Kobe. Kobe and I, he went into the league in 96, the same way with me. I developed a passion watching Kobe, watching his development. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the skill set as a Kobe. Even with Randy Moss, he's considered like, it's me, Randy, or Jerry, the one, two, or three. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the ability that Randy had year one. I had to gradually get better. Mm. Just think if I would have had the skill set of a Randy Moss in year one, what my stats or statistics would have been. It would have been off the charts. So when you try to question my greatness, just put it in perspective. Mm-hmm. I did it my way. It wasn't ideal. If I could have been great in year one, mm-hmm. that would have been awesome.
Well, you know, great doesn't have any category.
Yeah,
it's just greatness. You're a prick, you're greatness, you're a sweet guy, it just has no category.
So since you're kind of covering right now, so T.O.'s top five, you could put yourself in, obviously. Who's your top five receivers?
Receivers?
Including yourself, and you can put
Jerry, myself, Randy, I say Larry Fitzgerald.
Mm. Oh, that's me.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Man, that fifth one was always tough.
I was thinking, because your list is actually very similar to mine. It was Jerry, you, Randy,
Larry, a motherfucker, boy,
Fitz, and Calvin and Megatron.
Yeah, you can throw him. Yeah, throw him.
Megatron,
yeah. Calvin Johnson.
Yeah, I mean, but like when you think about when I came out, that's how I came up with the name of my clothing line, mm-hmm. Prototype. Because mm-hmm. when I came out of UT Chattanooga, like I said, I wasn't looked to be drafted in the first or second round. I wasn't one of your top 20 picks. But everybody kept saying, okay, he's a prototypical type of receiver. You know, he has the long arms, you know, rangy, got a little bit of speed. Mm-hmm. That's how they assess, you know, and really scouting, you know, me as a receiver. So that's how I came up. I kept hearing prototypical. So I came up with the name Prototype 81 for my clothing mm-hmm. line. And then the other creative part of that is that when you think of prototype, the word prototype means the basis on which something is made or formed. Everybody in this room is a prototype of some sort. Mm-hmm. It's in your DNA. You're a prototype. Mm-hmm. But you can't, my initials.
Everybody's different. Can you believe that? All of us, all these billions of people, we're all fucking different.
Of course. So my initials are T.O. You can't spell prototype without T.O. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the creativity, it's in me. If that's, even when I played football, when I came up with the touchdown dances.
Yeah, we got to talk about that. That was the creativity. Yeah.
But again, part of the narrative of me being arrogant, selfish, cocky, commentators looked at that as being selfish.
Yeah.
Me being arrogant, cocky, you know, against my opponents, saying that I wasn't a great teammate because I didn't celebrate with my teammate. But look at everything that I was being vilified for, criticized for, is now being embraced in the league.
Yeah.
They now have
a celebration dance.
What do you call those guys that sell Ajax and stuff? What do you call those guys? They all know them for commercial. You're a pitch man.
Oh, yeah?
You could sell some shit.
Hey, I feel like I can.
But I know you can.
But this is to my point. And I know this for a fact because I've had marketing guys, branding guys or what have you, that have pitched me for certain brands. And I'm not for every brand. But obviously times are different now.
Yeah.
But as you just said, I know that I'm marketable.
Now you can do some Gatorade, nigga.
But no, but check this out.
Get your strong energy.
I like how this has come full circle.
Yeah. Because
you're asking me, why aren't you doing this XYZ? Because of the persona, the narrative that the media has pushed, that I'm arrogant, I'm cocky.
Yeah.
They feel like I'm not a good pitch person because my image is negative.
That's wild.
But I say that because I know it for a fact because that's what they've told me why they didn't use
me. Want to know how we stop that right now?
Let's do it.
Tell those people who you are.
Yeah.
They see who I am. I don't have to tell them. Sometimes, like I said, all they need to do is have a 15 20-minute conversation with an individual. You can't go with perception. Perception, yeah, I get it, but perception is not my reality or their reality.
Perception is everybody's reality, if their perception, right?
Yeah, but it's not always reality. So well, the reality is that I'm negative, yeah. I'm this, I'm that.
Yeah, everything, I'm, like all of us, well, everything.
It's like them IG girls. They be, you know,
the Instagram
they be
models,
doing
yeah.
they be doing all that crazy stuff to themselves. Then when you see them in person, the filters, they don't look like that.
But I get it. But I, like I said, God has blessed me.
I got the name.
God has blessed me.
I don't know the name. Kit.
Kit?
Yeah.
What does that stand for?
It's the girl, man.
Kit? No, man, stop playing. You
know that girl. You know that girl.
No, I've been thinking about this the whole time.
You said it. Kit. I thought you were talking about...
Kit, listen. I know. I wish this white chick Knight could call.
Rider. I thought you were talking about the car. Knight Rider. Kit.
I'm seeing that you
dumb. Knight Energy. Knight Industries 2000.
He knows who it is. I can see how he's playing the role.
No, I'm just saying. You
like
said...
Kit, all right. Hey. He's too smart. You know, no. Sometimes you get you caught said, when you're too smart.
You said Kit.
No, you got. You know thought, who I'm talking about.
You said Kit.
You know who I'm talking about.
I thought Black hot car. Seat. I no, thought Michael Hasselhoff.
He's good.
I thought he's Michael good. Hasselhoff. I thought the smooth, show, really the TV so, show, he's Knight
really
Rider.
Good. Look at this suit, dog. Oh man, he's really good.
But I mean, you keep throwing. I am single.
No, Kit. I remember I seeing single. The girl. And I mean, Fat Country Boy Lunchbox.
But that's because you see
she
me
talking about loving him and right. all that stuff. Huh? Yes, he was
but
the
just,
guy.
But just because you see me with a girl, that doesn't
no,
mean
I'm
she's
not
my girlfriend.
Saying, I'm not saying. I'm not saying.
I have girlfriends. I have friend girls.
You don't have to defend yourself. You're
no,
too
no, I'm
defensive.
Not defending. No, I'm not defending
is he
myself.
Defensive?
No, I'm not defending myself.
Well, it's okay to get some pussy. It's all right. It's okay.
That
hey,
is trust
always
me. That,
get pussy.
That's documented.
Everybody.
Hall of Famers get a lot of poo-tang.
No, not Tyrell. Tyrell is choosy. So everybody from the Hall of Fame but Tyrell.
It's Terrell, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The pigs. Tyrell's a good man. I love you, brother.
Love you too, man.
Let's talk more about you.
Yeah.
So, what do you love, man? Tell me about your babies.
I love my kids. You know, the ones that their moms allow me to spend time with.
Oh, time. You brought something in the game that, hey, you got confrontation going on. What's up?
No confrontation.
Well, why didn't they let you hang out with the kids, man, nigga?
Going through a situation where, again, not like I said, me personally, like not having a dad in the household. I knew what that was like.
And you're paying money, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I wish somebody could. I can't see my kids.
Hey, but man,
money.
But they
get
use...
Get the fuck out of here. You paying money. Somebody I can't come in. And the white people see that I'm paying money, too? Are you crazy? There might be some violence.
Right, but it's not so cut and dry. It's not so black and white that way. Like I said, everybody's
right, so
situation.
You're giving the money up, and the courts can't say, hey, give Mr. Owens the kids he's paying to take care of
the kids.
Oh,
but the moms, you know, they're going to say, oh, well, you got to come here. You got to do this. You got to do
why
that.
Why wouldn't you do that? Let's just go get your baby's breakout with your new girl and your baby.
But then it's like, oh, well, they have my kids play sports, so then I can't really go take them and do that.
Well, you go there and cheer them on and hang out with them.
Trust me, I do when I. Trust me.
How old is your kids? Talk to me about your kids. Now, that's not hard on you talking about this shit, right?
No, I'm good. No. My
so
kids,
how old
is
your kids?
My oldest is 21.
Girl, boy?
Son.
Son, okay.
I have a 16-year-old girl, 16-year-old daughter. My son, my other son, I have three girls, two boys. Uh-huh. My son is 14 and my youngest is 6.
All right, so what do they do? Do they work? Do they like to play?
My oldest son is trying to play football. He'll be somewhere this year. My oldest daughter, she's playing volleyball here in Culver City, and my other daughter, she's sweet. She's gonna be like the smartest. She might be like a Kamala Harris or something. She's awesome. And she's very creative.
That
she doesn't have the athletic
that my
gene.
kids are 13 and 14 and they read better than I do. Yeah. It bothers me sometimes.
She's very intelligent.
13, 12 reading fucking Shakespeare and stuff. That bothers me.
Yeah. Why? So Tariq is 21. Yeah,
you provided that. You provided that.
Huh?
You were able to provide that
yeah,
to
but
them.
The, so they use that to me, all the stuff they learned. But the stuff that they learned in school indicate that's not a good guy. And I send them to this school to tell them that I'm a bad guy. Ain't that something?
Yeah, that is some shit.
Ain't that something that this school
said?
A guy like this is not cool. Oh, yeah? Yeah. Well, Daddy, you know you're a megalomaniac. Oh, well, who told you that? Your teacher?
Yeah. So my son, my other son is 14. He's playing tennis.
My daughter plays tennis, too.
Yeah, and then my youngest daughter, She's six. She's personality out of the world. She's into gymnastics, very, very smart. All my kids are very intelligent, by the way. But, yeah, I mean, I just, like I said, I try to do what I can while I can. At the same time, trying to, you know, keep those bills, keep those child support payments current and up to date.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's first and foremost. So I can't do a lot that I would like to do.
I didn't do much in my marriages. I used to take care of the kids. I'm just one of those guys. I'm just a provider. I'm a money maker. Take that. Some things I don't know. I don't know how to throw balls and play. You know, to be a teacher is special. You know, you can be a great athlete, but it takes a quality, special person to be a teacher.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very special.
I mean, and even like I said, but, you know, becoming a father, I mean, that takes special people to be that, too.
You
guys, as well.
Get that self-centeredness out of you. I got to forget about who I am and who I'm loving myself and focus it somewhere else. Because if I get caught in a little date, I could be thinking about myself in 2 days, 3 days, just in the days, you know. But it realizes it's all about your babies, you know?
Yeah.
That's what, you know.
Like I said,
they don't even like the way I live my life sometimes.
Right. Every situation, like I said, every situation is different with each kid, each parent.
Yeah, everybody's different.
So I try to navigate and manage
it. Do you have back problems?
Not soreness. I mean, no major back problem.
That indicates your back, something's wrong with your back when you lose this to your foot.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'm just comfortable. That. I mean, I can do like this.
Oh, I know, but you see,
that's what that indicates.
I did not know that.
Well, I mean, it's tight, sore. I mean, yeah, I just start back working out and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure that probably has something to do with it.
Kind of going back, I want to go back to this because you made a great point. You both made a great point to it. So, you know, now everyone's doing the TD celebrations. They're doing all this joint, all this stuff now, you know. I'm just curious, do you consider yourself, essentially you are, the godfather of touchdown celebrations, and how those come about?
I mean, they were dancing in the league before I even got into the league. So you think about Billy White Shoes Johnson, you think about the Icky Shuffle.
Wait, let me
tell you that. They were doing that stuff prior. They may not have did it as often.
Yeah.
Or they did the same thing every time.
But they didn't look as good as you did.
Yeah, and you took it next level. Like when you went
you
to
know
when,
you did. No, that's bro, time to bro, humble
you went to the cheerleaders.
Holy moly.
I remember this, I'm a child. I remember seeing this.
Oh, he's trying to humble.
My man went to the cheerleaders,
so
took the pom-poms out here, the popcorn, bro.
I've been trying to
fire.
Tell you guys. That's part of my creativity. Like some of my...
Listen, I didn't remember that until you brought it up.
Right.
You brought
I grew up on it. You know what I mean? I grew up seeing that. So I was like, yo, that's fire. Like
Some of my touchdowns were premeditated. They were planned. And some were just, you know, they were spontaneous.
Yeah.
The one that you mentioned with the pom-pom, that was spontaneous. Other than that, like I said, I wouldn't say that I'm a godfather.
All sexually orientated.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm a...
popcorn?
I'm a trendsetter. I would say... I would say that I'm a trendsetter to a degree.
Facts.
And then, like you said, you think about, like I said, when I played, I had, you know, some of the analysts or whatever, they really looked down upon the fact that I was
having fun.
Celebrating.
Yeah, and having fun.
Like,
yeah,
they looked at that as a negative. So, again, you think about one network saying
you
about
you think you have something to do with your blackness and your gyration of your pelvis?
I guarantee you, I'm sure it did. But that wasn't anything for me to get into discussion about. Yeah, of course I'm sure that had something to do with it because most of the people that were saying it, they were white commentators. And again,
but you're up there throwing the big black Alabama snake in the television.
I have some worries too about the white guy. Go look at my touchdown celebration. None of my touchdown celebration. They were in good taste. They weren't offensive.
They weren't whatsoever.
My touchdown celebrations. I'm just
fucking with you.
I know. They didn't tinker with the integrity of the game, none whatsoever. Did I push the envelope a little bit? Probably so. The probably one that I say I pushed the envelope was when I went from the end zone to the middle of the field in Dallas.
Nobody said
that there was a rule against it. I did it. It was creative. Emmett did it. My favorite probably was.
What's your favorite? You were creative.
Probably when I signed the shot. That was probably like the most creative.
Yeah, that was dope. That was dope. Yeah, I like that one too.
So again, for a lot of people that don't know about that touchdown celebration, they thought that I had the Sharpie in my sock the entire game. I didn't. I had it. I asked one of our equipment guys for a Sharpie.
Yeah.
Got it, put it in my sock right before the next series that I went out on the football
knew
field.
He was scoring.
So it'd be like Mike going around, then he go to the ring, go to the corner for your little break, and then you put a sharpie in your sock, and then you go knock a dude out, and then you take the sharpie out, and then you sign the glove.
And you kiss the
You know, you signed the glove. You know what I mean? That's equivalent to what I did.
Hey, well, listen, that's pretty badass. Check it out. I've been here before. Did you ever feel like y'all were bought niggas? Tell us you ever. I know I felt that way. You felt owned by people playing this game. Made you feel owned. You can't really live your life.
I don't know if to that degree, but did I ever feel that I was discriminated against or being
looked at
as property?
Property? I can't do that. The organization said I can't do that. I can't hang out with this guy.
I've never thought that.
I never thought about that. I mean, obviously, with everything, there's kind of like, I mean, it depends on who you want to hang out with, too. Like, didn't Gronk get caught hanging out with like some actress, some like porn star.
Oh, that was Jimmy Garoppolo was dating one too. I think.
They should give them a raid for going out with one.
But again, that could be very detrimental. I mean, to your image, everything.
So yeah,
it could tarnish your image, your brand, all of that stuff.
Saying, you got to be careful. Watch your image. They're trying to bring you down. I have an image now.
Right.
I never knew that I had just, an image.
She probably didn't want you to have that assist in your downfall how they viewed you.
For sure.
Wow, I ain't had no idea I had an image and shit. I just thought, I'm God's fool, so Mike, just start this shit again if I can humiliate you. Let me bring you up high if I can drop you again, Mike, for an example.
Oh, man. Mike, you funny, man.
Now, that's real talk. I look at my life like that. God's going to do what he wants with me. He knows I'm a fool, a dumb motherfucker, so he helps me out sometime.
God's always looking out, man. God loves
us. So what brings you back? If you've fallen and you know that you're kind of like, you're not supposed to do something, you get yourself in a situation, what brings you back? What brings you back to your center? I'm like, okay, I need to carry myself this way. I mean, because obviously you've gone through a lot. I mean, obviously we know who you are. We know what you've done. To even get to where you are now, what was that turning point to be like, okay, not that you got to walk a straight and narrow, but you got to do something different. You got to do some things different.
No, it's just that I'm stupid, and I know that I'm stupid. And by knowing that I'm stupid, God has mercy on me.
Okay. I feel you on that. I feel you on that. I honestly felt you on that.
It is what it is.
Grace and mercy, man. I'm telling you. Grace and mercy.
That's an amazing answer, Mike.
For sure. Yeah. I didn't expect it. I didn't know what to expect, but yeah. That's part of being ordained and being who you are.
No, because God gives me all this fucking fame. He knows I can't handle this shit. Why he keeps doing this shit to me?
But you're able to, again, you're able to continue to.
No, I cannot handle this shit.
Now, I didn't say you can handle it, but you're managing it. You're not really handling, but you're managing it. And you have people around to help you.
Yeah,
and I think that's what we all need. We need to have a team of people, those select people to kind of guide us.
I'm an idiot. If I don't have that, I walk out there butt fucking naked. Right. Why? I don't fucking know.
Right.
It's the show. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I haven't gotten to that point, but I mean, I've had my moments where you want to do something that you know you shouldn't do. But I think, like I said, for me, it's mercy. God has grace. And like I said, I'm very smart and I have knowledge about myself and I know the consequences of my actions. And so, again, like I said, you put God first. And so, like I said, I know that I was put on this earth for a reason. I know where my blessings come from, and I know that, I have kids. I have people that truly love me, and so before I get to that place, that dark place, I try to take myself to a place of sanity, of an understanding. Okay, what are the consequences of my actions? Yeah. We've all been there. I mean, I don't know if you've been there, but we've been in that situation. Even like I said, even the people that have wronged me, trust me. Like, yeah, it has nothing to do with being arrogant or cocky, but when you feel you've felt wronged and you've been done wrong, and people are flourishing and there are no really, you don't see that they had any consequences to your action, that can drive you to a place of insanity, to a point to like, yeah, you want to do something. And so again, we've all been through and experienced that. Like, yeah, if it's part of the mental health awareness, then that's what it is.
I was that guy a few years ago. Anytime anything was wrong, violence.
Yeah, trust me.
And then I realized that every time they made me mad, they fucking owned me. The motherfuckers don't get me mad no more.
Yeah. That's an awesome realization, though. Awesome realization.
Oh, I was violent like a motherfucker, man. Mm-hmm. Most of my money went to lawsuits.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that and again, shit. when you talk about...
Don't say something like, you're the greatest, I love you, I might get mad.
So again, you alluded to, or you said something earlier about my kids. The laws are so in favor of the moms, the women, that we got to come out of our pockets. We got to pay for their attorneys, our attorneys. Like you said, it's a headache. It's stressful. It's basically like,
yeah, but
what
is
the
point?
I don't
care about no money. Let me see my fucking kids.
I get that. But then
that goes to another
right. But that creates another right. If you don't have no money, that's creating another problem. That's gonna create another problem. So I just like I said, I go with the situations that I learned with my and that I've been in with my first kid, the moms of my first kid, four kids, my relationship with the daughter of my mom, my last kid, night and day. Because I have to take accountability is communication. I wasn't really in a relationship with him. And that's what happens, that I didn't have any relationship or any communication with him, which made those moments stressful and hard right at the exit of my football career. So my last 6 years, with my daughter's mom, night and day. Yeah. It was because of I learned how to communicate. And then, I had to check my ego a bit and think about my daughter. Not that I didn't think about my kids, because I did think about my kids. I met my financial obligations. But then, when things started to shift and change and they weren't getting the financial support that they were getting, then which they felt like was going to continue on when I wasn't working, that's when things hit the fan.
So I'm kind of curious, because you guys are talking about some great stuff. And so young athletes now are going to the league, they get a lot of money, boxers, football players, basketball players. What do y'all have to, what are the traps kind of, because I've, especially because I got drafted out here in L.A. So, I've been lucky enough, with my parents to instill that foundation kind of, with me being frugal and the traps not to fall into. What would you guys tell those athletes that are making so much money and being in that spotlight?
Don't put the trust in your agent or financial advisors. Mm. You've worked so hard to get to a point.
Yeah.
And then you put your trust in them and you don't really, you're one of the few. But if you don't have that financial literacy, if you don't know about stocks and trades and assets, liabilities and all these things.
No, but they have a legal code, fiduciary duty to tell you.
Exactly. But some would take full advantage of that. Because
you
I was in a situation where, I had an agent who referred me to a financial advisor that was basically managing probably 80 to 100 of his clients. Mm. I didn't find out till after I had lost my money that he knew that the financial advisor that he had referred me or recommended me to, they had done some improper things. Ooh. So you talk about
stole a little bit of money from me, boom, he's in jail.
Yeah, but
you got to be on top of them. But that's why I said every fighter in this movie should take a percentage and create their own dream team, a legal league to protect them. Their fiduciary duty to make sure they don't steal or take advantage of them.
So that's what I would advise young kids to do. And I think these agents, they take advantage of the kids through the parents.
Yeah.
And you think about most of black athletes.
Yeah, their parents.
It's single parent homes. You don't have a mom.
They don't know about it.
Right. So they're going to get through the kids.
That's why you need a legal lawyer. That only job is to look after you.
Right. But again, I'm not here bashing all agents.
No.
Or advisors. But I want to preface that because, somebody see this and they'll create a story. Oh, TOs that. XYZ. Yeah.
Do you care what somebody says about you?
But it's the image. Like I said, if I'm trying to promote a wine and I'm trying to sell
business, you're right, but
you know what I mean? That all of that's gonna affect my business. Yeah. So I do have to care to a degree.
Okay, I have a you get what I'm saying? Now I'm trying to find out where's the people that work for me. What is my image?
Yeah, there's my image. For work for me or work
breaking
for you?
Third wall. I'm breaking the third wall right now.
Oh, okay.
What am I doing? You know what I mean? This is the calmest interview I got. Normally I'm talking about bitches. You know? And I'm just saying, what is my image? I'm trying to change now. What is this I could do to stay on air?
Right.
I'm never going to get a fucking viewer.
They'll tease it. They'll probably give him a little teaser. Not be as graphic.
Yeah. No, Ty, check this out. Once I started cursing and talking about my balls, these guys are paying me now.
Well, they know what's paying.
Oh, God.
But, yeah, to your point, I mean, that would be my advice, really, for these young kids, even the parents, more so to the parents.
Yeah.
Because the agents are going to get, even college coaches or what have you, even with recruiting, they go talk to the parents to get their kids to come to
their school. That's what it is. That's how I went to my school. That's exactly how I went to my school.
That's why the lawyers did.
I get it.
Fiduciary lawyer.
But there are some slick lawyers, too, and some of these agents, they're slick as well. They know the law as well.
Especially those big-time agencies, bro. I know, they tied in.
You give these guys too much credit that they're smarter than you.
I never said that they were smarter than me. They're basically using their smarts to their advantage.
I love challenging that stuff.
But that's what I think. That's what needs to be made clear, and these parents aware. Yeah. We need to make them aware of is that when these agents obviously go to the parents and even to the kids, we're gonna take care of
half a percent what you make for those NFL leagues, you'd be a billionaire. Half a percent.
Yeah.
Half what they make, what you make. Make those people. You have to give you 0.5%. Yeah. Not 1%, a half.
Yeah.
So you be talking some real shit. Yeah.
Have the parents really educate themselves, do their due diligence on the agents. I'm talking about do a history. Because had I known the things that I know about Drew Rosenhaus and Rosenhaus Sports, I would have never signed with him.
Yeah, I heard some stuff
from
them.
If I would have known about my financial advisor that he referred and recommended me to, I wouldn't have signed with him.
Yeah. Agents do that too.
Trust me.
See, I had a financial advisor, but I didn't have no money when he was stealing, so he went to jail too for a while. But I'm saying, I'm just a strong believer in lawyers. I used to hate lawyers, but I'm a strong believer.
There are some good lawyers and some bad lawyers. There's good agents and bad agents.
The only thing you need is a trainer and an agent for a fighter. You need a lawyer and a trainer. That's all he needs.
Right.
If he wants them hang on, that's on him. But all he needs is a trainer and a lawyer, and life is simple.
You said hang-ons?
People that like to hang
around. Leeches.
No.
What
listen.
About that? Let's talk about that, too.
Listen,
Mike, what do you have to say about that for young players?
I love leeches, nigga, because I love to be sucked on and people telling me shit. If I don't got enough leeches, I'm going to jump off the hill, nigga.
Quick, time out. I need me some leeches.
You're saying female leaches. You're not talking male leeches. You're talking female leeches.
No, listen, I'm talking about anybody that has a purpose. He could be a male, he could hold a drug. This nigga could be the one to get all the girls. This guy could be the one to make sure all the bills are paid.
Just wanted to make sure I'm clear.
This is what I learned.
That's all.
If people in your life and they don't have a purpose, what the fuck they in your life for? Yeah.
It's real.
Anybody gets me in the corner, they might do this, do that. But, who's going to suffer? Who's going to add and make this a better situation?
Yeah.
Right. All right, I'm champ and I got money. Now, what are you going to do to make this situation better? I'm a champ and I got all this money. I got $50 million. Say $50 million. Mm-hmm. And I'm a young guy, 19 years old. Yeah. And what are you going to do to make this clan better, this situation I'm in? Young nigga with a bunch of millions. How are you going to make it better? What is your job to make it better? What are you going to do?
Yeah.
That's my thing. When I'm in somewhere and I see some room and the room is dirty, I can start cleaning the room.
Yeah,
I want to do whatever I can to make this a better situation.
So essentially, you're telling the young athletes out there, if you do have an entourage, make sure they all got a set job.
They have to have
job,
a purpose.
Yeah.
A set job. Listen,
they got a job description.
A set job.
The weak, yeah. The weak don't learn from the strong to earn their keep. Do you understand that, young man? The weak don't learn from the strong. Mm-hmm. The weak steal from the strong.
Mm.
Don't weak learn. Weaks don't learn from the strong.
Mm.
Why I have to? Why I have to learn from when I can steal from him?
Oh, I like that. I like that. So T.O., continue this. Favorite place? Where you think is better, Philly or Dallas? Fans wise, experience wise.
Philly.
I'm thinking Philly. I'm thinking Philly because Philly's kind of lit.
No.
They go hard.
Obviously, fans. Dallas. I mean, there are more Dallas fans.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make them better. Yeah. But when you talk about passionate fans,
yeah,
I would definitely have to go with Philly.
Yeah.
And I liken myself to the Philly fans because that's how I grew up, a hard worker. I think about my grandmother, just, mm-hmm, you know, she did whatever she could to make ends meet. The same with my mom. You know what I mean? My mom was a seamstress. She did a number of things just to keep food on the table. Mm-hmm. In addition to, like I said, my grandmother, you know, helping.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, when you talk about Philly, I went to the Super Bowl with the Eagles. That was by far, like I said, you know, everybody would ask me like my favorite team. I would have to say in between, you know, Philly and Dallas, because not a knock on San Francisco, but I felt like I was utilized to the best of my ability at those two stops.
Andy Reid does an amazing, bro. He's, till this day, he's an amazing coach.
It's not a surprise that he got fired from Philly, go over to Kansas City, and within, 5 years, he's gone to two Super Bowls already. So that just shows you, obviously, the worth and the value of him as a coach and what he can get out of his players.
Yeah, and their offense is always
dynamic. Hey, Tom, we're going to talk about some motherfucking Tom Bradley now, right? McBrady, I mean.
Oh, yeah. So that's Super Bowl. Yeah, that's Super Bowl.
Come on, man.
Don't mind. Let's talk about that.
Tom, we up here talking about all these other motherfuckers. Come on, Tom, the mega GOAT.
He's like the second. Joe Montana is the best to me. He's the greatest. He hasn't lost any Super Bowls.
Shit.
It's just like you compare. It's just like MJ and LeBron. But you can't even. For me, it's MJ, Kobe to LeBron.
Okay.
If you got a guy that has lost no championships, how can you put somebody above him?
Hmm.
That's why I have to stick with you and that. Tom Brady's just my man.
No, he's fuck good. Yeah, shit, he's going nigga. To what? He got seven. Been to what, 10?
And still climbing.
10 Super Bowls.
Still climbing.
It's hard.
Climbing.
I mean, you have a compelling argument, but like I said, when you think about somebody's record that is unblemished, I got to go with the unblemished.
Yeah. But you know, some people that have been beaten that have surpassed people that's even unbeaten.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, the last few questions. So, you know, I'm just curious because, you know, growing up and, you know, reading stuff and hearing stuff and all that stuff. I'm just curious. Have you and McNabb ever like mend y'all relationship?
We tried. I tried that. I thought it was
McNabb
cool.
McNabb was a motherfucker too, boy.
And then, play. So I mean, I kind of addressed it. It is what it is. Yeah. I mean, he didn't want to really. I guess at one point in time, I guess there was so much talk that I came in and I helped. I guess. Catapult his career or his statistics when I was there, and he didn't like the fact that people were saying that I was a contributing factor to that. And which for me, I know that I couldn't do the things that I did on the football without on the football field without
him.
It was a complimentary type of thing. And so again, what I did in that year span, again, if you look at his stats before I got there, during and after, obviously there was a common denominator. Everywhere that I've been on the receiving end, and I've contributed a lot to the offense.
Yeah.
Speaking of Andy Reid, that's what I brought to the table. That's the type of athlete that I was. When you talk about you feeling that moment, or you know you're the greatest, or you know you're good at what you do, that's how I felt.
Yeah.
And so what I did, you know, I played 21 games.
Feel bitter a little?
No. I played 21 games and I scored 20 touchdowns.
Yeah.
With Philly. Jeez. So. Again, I went to the Super Bowl, but prior to the Super Bowl, Mike, I got hurt.
Yeah.
And then leading up to the Super Bowl, the injury that I had, they said that I wasn't going to play in the Super Bowl. So I had 6.5-7 weeks to get ready. Yeah. I had 2 screws on the plate, broke my leg.
Yeah.
I came back and played. Leading up to the Super Bowl, I didn't play in those 2 playoff games to get to the Super Bowl. So the question was, based on what I had done throughout that course of the season, was I going to be ready for the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Did they need me to play in the Super Bowl? He was very negative in his response. Like, oh, we don't need T.O. We've been there before.
Mm.
So that's where I think the friendship started to fracture a bit.
Yeah.
Again, I would have never thought that somebody being in his position, captain of the team, a leader of the team, would have such negative comments. And so that's where our friendship kind of, you know, went sideways.
You know, somewhere in your life, you guys got to shake hands and say,
man. We did. Oh, I thought that had happened. And then he went on a show and then had some negative things to say and said that I prevented them from going back to the Super Bowl. Oh. All these type of things.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, okay, well, where is all this coming from? When I thought, you're right. I thought we had shaken on it, but he brought it back up. So it is what it is. Mike?
Last thing. This is the last thing. Well, a lot of people don't know, well, don't know about football players in general. And Mike, I'm pretty sure that you guys battle through this too as a boxer, as a professional boxer, is injuries. Bro, I remember growing up also reading about and watching like NFL Network, all that stuff.
30
about
for 30.
30 for 30, you know. Yeah. And we battle through injuries, dog. We play through injuries. Mm-hmm. What was the most gruesome, and you just, I think you kind of brushed on it, most brutal injury that you faced that you had to play through? And you too, Mike, I want to hear your.
Probably, when I end up, like I said, I tore all the ligaments in my ankle, end up having to have surgery. I had two screws and a plate. And then, like I said, I didn't know I had broken my leg mm-hmm. until like the next day. So I was right at the threshold of the healing point of 6.5-7 weeks for my fibula to heal. And so that was pretty much when I played in the game, that's what bugged me more so than my actual ankle. But yeah. Obviously the two screws and the plate is what held everything in place. But again, I have a high threshold for pain.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it is.
I played throughout a number of injuries. Mm-hmm. When you talk about consistency, you think about how soft the game is now. You know, guys can't even play with little dings. I mean, hamstring pulls, but a lot of that, you know, obviously, like I said, that's part of how they train. Hydration and all this that people drink, they don't understand that that's what factors into some of the soft tissue injuries and stuff like that. But that was probably the worst injury that I had to play through. But I played through a number of injuries. But in order, again, to get at the Hall of Fame level, if there wasn't any consistency in my place, obviously in my play, to actually get on the field and play through some of those injuries, mm-hmm. then I don't think I'd be a Hall of Famer. Yeah. But that was just part of my DNA, part of my makeup. Yeah. Like I said, I mean,
you're just tough, bro.
I was a tough kid. You know, I was a tough player. And so, like I said, that's what I guess propelled me. Mm-hmm. That's what separates people. That separates the good and the great.
Yeah.
It's something within us that separates us. And some people, some athletes, they don't know what that is.
Yeah. It's nothing. It's so simple. It's just, this is God's work. This is God's
work. That too. But again, you have to take advantage of God's work too. You have to take advantage of it.
Yes, it's true too. But when is your time? You know, when, there's nothing greater and more successful than the person that time has come. There's nothing that can stop that.
No, you can't stop it, but you can enhance it. You know, by taking full advantage of the ability that God has given you. There are plenty.
How do you do that?
There are blueprints out there. You are a blueprint for some boxers right now.
Yeah.
They you are walking blueprint.
I could be a blueprint for a boxer, but I couldn't teach him to do it. Isn't that something?
Yeah. Right, but it's got to be something. Yeah, it's got to be in him.
There's a lot of great. It's crazy because a lot of greats, like, it's like Aaron. Like, it's so interesting because I play with Aaron Donald. Uh-huh. And the shit he does, bro, like, you can't teach that. Like. Right. The shit he does, like, he just does it.
Some people
you can't explain
talent.
It.
It's talented. Talent.
God just blessed him with the ability to be able to lift up 300-pound men.
Listen, Muhammad Ali does everything wrong in boxing. All the rules in boxing is wrong, but he's the greatest.
But he's the greatest, exactly. Right. So it's like some guys are just gifted. Like, they're just gifted.
Yeah.
But Mike, what about you? What are some of the injuries that you dealt with?
Always my back and my hands. I would do this. I would just get numb up all during training, shoot up all during training, and then boom. Just fight. Because once I'd rather fight hurt but in condition than be
hurt
healthy
and out of
and
condition.
No, facts. I hear that.
Right.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah, that's crazy.
I fight hurt in condition. That's nothing. But I wouldn't fight if I'm not hurt out of condition.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Right. But I saw greatness in Jerry. I witnessed from just watching, you know, guys around the league mm-hmm. what it took. The 49er way was, you know, just how we practice, we finish, we catch a ball 15, take it the distance.
Yeah.
That's how I conditioned myself. So I wanted to be just like Jerry at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realized, like, oh, I can't be Jerry. Jerry is Jerry.
Yeah. But you could take things and apply it to your game.
Right.
And that's
exactly.
What
that's what I did. And so I saw, like I said, there was just something in me that didn't want to – I had a strong dissatisfaction for being mediocre. I experienced that in high school. I was mediocre in high school.
What is mediocre? That's a word somebody made up. But what is
It's just being you're being average.
Yeah.
You're just fitting
that
in. You're not standing out. That scares me too. Right.
That's I'm around insecurities. Those are insecurities. Being average.
Well, again, maybe it is. Again, how do you get out of those insecurities? How do you get yourself from being insecure? It just doesn't happen.
Yeah. It's just
you have to do a lot of things that to get you in a position of out of mediocrity and not having insecure ways.
I've known a lot of great people. I've met a lot of great people. But most of the great people I've met weren't good people. Mm. So I'd rather be a good person than a great person by far. Mm. Because that's sort of the bad that great does. Even from my perspective, I'm great. I've done things that I'm not proud of. But we have to have that perspective of what great is.
Mm. Yeah, and again, people are going to perceive us to be a certain way. You said you're a good person. For me, I know I'm a good person.
Yeah.
I know I got a mean streak in me as well. But I choose who I'm going to be good to. Mm-hmm. I know I'm a good person. I have the license to know who I'm going to be good to. Mm-hmm. Understand, like I said, people are going to try to come at you sideways a number of ways, get you out of character.
Yeah.
And I'm one of those guys, I try not, I know if I get mad or if I get taken to that
point. He lost big time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But I try not to take myself there. People never really seen me in that element, and I try not to get there because I don't know what I may do. So I try to remain calm and just, like I said, understand the bigger picture, understand that there's always consequences to your action. And like I said,
what does that look like to you?
Just providing, you know what I mean? Being able to maximize, monetize who I am, being able to, take the influx of opportunities that the league has afforded me, being the Hall of Famer that I am, making the most of that. And so I know my worth. It's just like signing autographs. I haven't signed an autograph since I made the Hall of Fame because I know that there are leeches out there. There are autograph scam guys out there. Yeah. I know what my worth is. They're going to try to get you, lowball you, and then upcharge the items that you sell far more, probably double or triple than what they're giving you. No, you're going to give me my full market value. I'm going to make up for what I didn't get because I know my worth. Mm. So for me, at the end of the day, if you think about Uncle Sam, they're going to take, being in the tax bracket, they're going to take almost half of it anyway. So for me.
How do you feel about that? The government taking half of your money.
Hey, man, that's just the world we live in. That's just the rules and the laws that we have. That's not the laws we have to abide to.
Do you think that's a violation of civil rights?
I mean, I'm not well versed in that type of.
Some people think taxes illegal extortion.
Legal, I mean, extortion. It seems like it, yeah, when you're in a different tax bracket than somebody else. But those are the laws. I mean, you have to abide by the laws. I mean, there are some things you like.
I think we should know where our money go. I think we should be very charitable.
True, absolutely.
We should spend half of our money and give it to people less fortunate than us. But we should know where it's going.
I mean, I grant. I mean, there's a lot of people that are disadvantaged in certain situations. Look at the WNBA. They're not making nearly as much money as I feel like that they should.
Yeah.
I feel like, to be honest, you look at how much the NBA generates versus the WNBA.
Only way that can happen if the men help and contribute to them.
Exactly.
That's the only way that can happen.
But going back to your point of
that too. Yeah. And I think too, honestly, to help to find a way to help push the WNBA to where it needs to be with such great women athletes that we've witnessed over a number of years. Mm-hmm. I think the fine money, this is my suggestion, some of the fine money that a lot of these guys are being fined. Should fund the WNBA.
Don't forget that. Everybody gets $50,000 up. And I guarantee you,
if you think about that, if you tally up all the money, the fine money that these players rack up,
you don't.
I guarantee
them.
It makes.
That's
more,
not a good word to use. Fine them and we give it to the broad. So now we don't like them
for everything,
though. Now we don't like them. We
get
fined.
You get fined for accidents, bro.
They have to openly in their heart.
But I'm curious to know.
They have to openly in their heart give the money to the
women. No, you're true.
Absolutely, because they be giving it away anyway with some of the ridiculous stuff that they be doing.
Well, I think some of the guys are jealous too.
Jealous? Why would they be jealous of women? Why would they?
What is a woman to you?
Wow.
What is a woman to you?
It's my mom, it's my sister, it's my aunt.
But how do you level up to them as far as stature. What do you feel about the
women? I mean, a lot of us wouldn't be who we are without the women.
But didn't you say why?
But why would the NBA players be jealous of WNBA players? That's my thing. Why would they? They wouldn't have no reason to.
Because they know they should have more money.
No,
they do.
I don't know. I can't speak for them.
Why wouldn't they help them?
I would.
You're going to get what you were.
You're right. Great.
No.
So I'm going to look in the camera. NBA guys, all you guys out there, help your sisters. Help your fellow man.
Don't be jealous of them because they're scoring.
I don't think they're jealous. But yeah, they understand that the women have struggled to be on equal paying field.
Do you know what jealousy is?
Describe it. Explain it to me.
Jealousy is indescribable. Why do one person think this person shouldn't have what he has? You can't even describe it. Why is somebody jealous? We have it naturally. You don't even know the science of it. It's almost like the science of love. It's inconceivable.
I get it. That's my thing for all the NBA guys. Hey, you give away money, especially the guys that give money. Draymond Green. He's giving up what?
What's he giving?
20,000. Boy, he's giving up. You know what amount of money that he's giving up?
Why is he giving up money? What's happening?
Getting text.
What happened? He fouls people or something? They don't like his
personality? Going off on the refs, inappropriate
things. Some of these referees need to have thick skin.
True. But that has nothing to do with what I'm trying to get these guys to do. Yeah, help your sister. These are your sisters. This is the WNBA. You're the sister to the NBA.
But then people look at this as competition.
No, they shouldn't be. They shouldn't be, though. But I've always said that. I haven't said it publicly until now.
Just like in fighting, the women should get money.
About it. I've always said, like, the NBA should somehow find a way to help fund the WNBA until it gets to the point. Then they can just do it on their own.
The whole objective is for entertainers, myself, you, to be our own boss. Why are we going to be slaves for somebody? Why can't we be slaves for ourselves? You know?
I don't know. I mean...
That's what this is all about.
So is the NFL softer, Gio?
Oh,
for imagine. I gotta get this question. Is the NFL softer? Brutally honest. Is it softer?
Absolutely. I don't think it's fair either. If you can't graze the leg of a quarterback, then what makes you think what makes you think it's appropriate for a defensive back to go shoot at a guy's knee?
Thank you. I'm glad someone's saying he's an offensive player. I just don't understand how you expect someone to disengage from a block, another 320-pound man, maybe getting double-teamed, get through, and then somehow not try to hit him.
Even not try to hit him low. It's not crazy. Because you're off, but even in the motion of what y'all do trying to get at the quarterback, just say you're making a swim move, and you just so happen grazed the helmet of him. That's a foul.
And a fine.
That's you crazy. Can't just freeze frame and well, then move be your illegal to avoid the quarterback.
Yeah. Like, well, listen, again, football has a bad name with the concussion game.
Everybody else's health, every position's health is just as valuable as a quarterback. I understand the dynamic of, you got to have your leader. You got to have your faces of the NFL. Yeah. So you're basically trying to tell me my face doesn't matter?
It matter, yeah.
My body doesn't matter?
It's just political. They don't have any competition with the medical league.
But at the end of the day, like I said, the game is softer because of some of the rules that have been
implemented. You guys don't feel like it's just one big plantation that two people own.
That's a whole other conversation.
Hey, I'm going to have to come back on the show, man.
Hey, we just want to thank you, T.O.
Oh, man, it was so beautiful.
This is awesome, man.
You.
We really appreciate you taking your time, man, coming out here. Mike, thank you for allowing me to co-host with you today.
Hey, listen, brother, you're always welcome.
I appreciate that.
Brilliant show.
Yes, sir. This is Hot Boxing.
Hot Boxing.
Mike Tyson, T.O., and Sebastian Joseph Day, nose tackle for LA Rams. You know the vibes. We out of here.
Love.